Eleanor. They'd parked on the far side of the market, and the lot was mostly empty by the time they got back. Eleanor felt tense and reckless again. Maybe it was something about this car. The Impala might not look pervy on the outside, not like a fully carpeted custom van or something, but the inside was a different story. The front seat was almost as big as Eleanor's bed, and the back seat was an Erica Jong novel, just waiting to happen. Park opened the door for her, then ran around the car to get in. "It's not as late as I thought," he said, looking at the clock on the dash. 8:30. "Yeah," she said. She put her hand down on the seat between them. She tried to do it casually, but it came off pretty obvious. Park laid his hand on top of hers. It was just that kind of night. Every time she looked at him, he was looking back at her. Every time she thought about kissing him, he was already closing his eyes. "Read my mind now," she thought. "Are you hungry?" he asked. "No," she said. "Okay." Park took his hand away and put the key in the ignition. Eleanor reached up and caught his sleeve before he could turn it. He dropped the keys, and all in one motion, he turned and scooped her into his arms. Seriously, scooped. He was always stronger than she expected him to be. If you were watching them now, and you totally could, because the windows weren't fogged over yet, you'd think that Eleanor and Park did this kind of thing all the time, not just the once before. This time was already different. They weren't moving forward in orderly steps like a game of Mother May I. They weren't even kissing each other square on the mouth. Lining things up neatly would take too long. Eleanor climbed up his shirt, climbing on top of him, and Park kept pulling her to him, even when she couldn't come any closer. She was wedged between Park and the steering wheel, and when he pushed his hand up her shirt, she leaned against the horn. They both jumped, and Park accidentally bit her tongue. "Are you okay?" he asked. "Yeah," she said, glad that he didn't pull his hand away. Her tongue didn't seem to be bleeding. "You?" "Yeah." He was breathing heavy, and it was wonderful. "I did this to him," she told herself. "Do you think..." he said. "What?" He probably thought they should stop. "No," she thought. "No, I don't think. Don't think, Park." "Do you think we should... Don't think I'm a creep, okay? Do you think we should get in the back seat?" She pushed off him and slid over the back seat. God, it was huge. It was glorious. Not even a second later, Park landed on top of her.
Park. She felt so good underneath, even better than he'd expected. And he'd expected her to feel like heaven, plus Nirvana, plus that scene in Willy Wonka where Charlie starts to fly. Park was breathing so hard, he couldn't get any air. It seemed impossible that this could feel as good to Eleanor as it did to him. But she was making these faces. She looked like a girl in a Prince video. If Eleanor was feeling anything like what he was feeling, how were they ever supposed to stop? He pulled her shirt up over her head. "Bruce Lee," she whispered. "What?" That didn't seem right. Park's hands froze. "Super hot Asian guy. Bruce Lee." "Oh." He laughed. He couldn't help it. "Okay, I'll give you Bruce Lee." She arched her back and he closed his eyes. He'd never get enough of her.
Chapter 46. Eleanor. Richie's truck was in the driveway, but the whole house was dark, thank God. Eleanor was sure that something would give her away. Her hair, her shirt, her mouth. She felt radioactive. She and Park had been sitting in the alley for a while, in the front seat, just holding hands and feeling whiplashed. At least that's how Eleanor felt. It wasn't that she and Park had gone too far, necessarily, but they'd gone a whole lot farther than she'd been prepared for. She'd never expected to have a love scene straight out of a Judy Blume book. Park must be feeling strange, too. He sat through 2 Bon Jovi songs without even touching the radio. Eleanor had left a mark on his shoulder, but you couldn't see it anymore. This was her mom's fault. If Eleanor were allowed to have normal relationships with boys, she wouldn't have felt like she had to hit a home run the very first time she ended up in the back seat of a car. She wouldn't have felt like it might be her only time at bat. And she wouldn't be making these stupid baseball metaphors. It hadn't been a home run, anyway. They'd stopped at second base. At least, she thought it was second base. She'd heard conflicting definitions for the bases. Still, it was wonderful. So wonderful that she wasn't sure how they'd survive never doing it again. "I should go in," she said to Park after they'd been sitting in the car a half hour or more. "I'm usually home by now." He nodded, but didn't look up or let go of her hand. "Okay," she said. "We're okay, right?" He looked up then. His hair had flattened out, and it fell in his eyes. He looked concerned. "Yeah," he said. "Oh, yeah, I'm just..." She waited. He closed his eyes and shook his head like he was embarrassed. "I just really don't want to say goodbye to you, Eleanor. Ever." He opened his eyes and looked straight into her. Maybe this was third base. She swallowed. "You don't have to say goodbye to me, ever," she said. "Just tonight." Park smiled, then he raised an eyebrow. Eleanor wished she could do that. "Tonight," he said. "But not ever?" She rolled her eyes. She was talking like him now, like an idiot. She hoped it was too dark in the alley for him to see her blush. "Goodbye," she said, shaking her head. "I'll see you tomorrow." She opened the door to the Impala. It weighed as much as a horse. Then she stopped and looked back at him. "But we're okay, right?" "We're perfect," he said, leaning forward quickly and kissing her cheek. "I'll wait for you to get in." As soon as Eleanor slipped in the house, she could hear them fighting. Richie was yelling about something and her mom was crying. Eleanor moved toward her bedroom as quietly as she could. All the little kids were on the floor, even Maisie. They were sleeping through the chaos. "I wonder how often I sleep through it," Eleanor wondered. She managed to swing onto her bed without stepping on anybody, but she landed on the cat. He squawked and she pulled him up and onto her lap. "Shh," she breathed, scratching his neck. Richie shouted again, "My house!" And Eleanor and the cat both jumped. Something crunched beneath her. She reached under her leg and pulled out a badly crumpled comic book, an X-Men annual. "Damn it, Ben." She tried to smooth the comic out on her lap, but it was covered in some goop. The blanket felt wet, too. It was lotion or something. No, liquid makeup, with little bits of broken glass. Eleanor carefully picked a shard out of the cat's tail and set it aside, then wiped her wet fingers on his fur. A length of oily brown cassette tape was wrapped around his leg. Eleanor pulled it free. She looked down the bed and blinked until her eyes adjusted to the dark. Torn comic book pages. Powder. Little pools of green eyeshadow. Miles of cassette tape. Her headphones were snapped in half and hanging from the edge of the bunk. Her grapefruit box was at the end of the bed, and Eleanor knew before she reached for it that it would be light as air, empty. The lid was ripped almost in half, and someone had written on it in bold black marker, with one of Eleanor's markers. "Do you think you can make a fool of me? This is my house. Do you think you can whore around my neighborhood right under my nose and I'm not going to find out? Is that what you think? I know what you are, and it's over." Eleanor stared at the lid and struggled to make the letters into words, but she couldn't get past the familiar spill of lowercase letters. Somewhere in the house, her mother was crying like she was never going to stop. Chapter 47. Eleanor, Eleanor considered her options. 1. Chapter 48. Eleanor. Do I make you wet? She pulled back the soiled blanket and set the cat on the clean sheet underneath. Then she climbed from the top bunk to the bottom. Her book bag was sitting by the door. Eleanor unzipped it without getting off the bed and took Park's photo out of the side pocket. Then she was out the window and on the porch and running down the street faster than she'd ever run in gym class. She didn't slow down until she was on the next block, and then only because she didn't know where to go. She was almost to Park's house. She couldn't go to Park's house. Pop that cherry. Hey, Red! Eleanor ignored the girl's voice. She looked back at the street. What if somebody had heard her leave the house? What if Richie came after her? She stepped off the sidewalk into someone's yard, behind a tree. Hey! Eleanor! Eleanor looked around. She was standing in front of Steve's house. The garage door was mostly closed, propped open with a baseball bat. Eleanor could see someone moving inside, and Tina was walking down the driveway holding a beer. Hey! Tina hissed. She looked as disgusted with Eleanor as ever. Eleanor thought about running again, but her legs felt weak. Your stepfather's been looking for you, Tina said. He's been driving around the neighborhood all goddamn night. What did you tell him? Eleanor said. Did Tina do this? Is that how he knew? I asked him if his dick was bigger than his truck, Tina said. I didn't tell him anything. Did you tell him about Park? Tina narrowed her eyes, then shook her head. But somebody's going to. Suck me off. Eleanor looked back at the street. She had to hide. She had to get away from him. What's wrong with you, anyway? Tina asked. Nothing. A pair of headlights stopped at the end of the block. Eleanor put her arms over her head. Come on, Tina said in a voice Eleanor had never heard before. Concerned. You just need to stay out of his way until he cools off. Eleanor followed Tina up the driveway, crouching to get into the hazy, dark garage.
Is that Big Red?
Steve was sitting on a couch. Mikey was there, too, on the floor, with one of the girls from the bus. There was Hessian music, Black Sabbath, coming from a car up on blocks in the middle of the garage. Sit down, Tina said, pointing to the other end of the couch.
You're in trouble, Big Red, Steve said. Your daddy's looking for you.
Steve was grinning from ear to ear. His mouth was bigger than a lion's. It's her stepdad, Tina said.
Stepdad? Steve shouted, throwing a beer can across the garage. Your fucking stepdad? Do you want me to kill him for you? I'm gonna kill Tina's anyway. I could get them both in the same day. Buy one, get one, he giggled. Buy one, get one. Free.
Tina opened a beer and shoved it into Eleanor's lap. Eleanor took it, just to have something to hold. Drink up, Tina said. Eleanor took a sip obediently. It tasted sharp and yellow.
We should play quarters, Steve slurred. Hey, Red, do you have any quarters?
Eleanor shook her head. Tina perched next to him on the arm of the couch and lit a cigarette. We had quarters, she said. We spent them on beer, remember?
Those weren't quarters, Steve said. That was a 10.
Tina closed her eyes and blew smoke at the ceiling. Eleanor closed her eyes, too. She tried to think about what she should do next, but nothing came to her. The music on the car radio switched from Sabbath to AC/DC to Zeppelin. Steve sang along. His voice was surprisingly light. Hangman, hangman, turn your head a while. Eleanor listened to Steve sing song after song over the wet hammer of her heartbeat. The beer can went warm in her hand.
I know you're a slut. You smell like cum.
She stood up. I've got to get out of here. God, Tina said. Relax, he won't find you here. He's probably already at the rail, drinking it off. No, Eleanor said. He's going to kill me. It was true, she realized. Even if it wasn't. Tina's face was hard, So, where are you going to go? Away. I have to tell Park.
Park. Park couldn't sleep. That night, before they'd climbed back into the front seat of the Impala, he'd taken off all of Eleanor's layers and even unpinned her bra, then laid her down on the blue upholstery. She'd looked like a vision there, a mermaid. Cool white in the darkness, the freckles gathered on her shoulders and cheeks like cream rising to the top. The sight of her. She still glowed on the inside of his eyelids. It was going to be constant torture now that he knew what she was like under her clothes. And there wasn't a next time in their near future. Tonight was another fluke, a lucky break. A gift.
Park!
Someone said. Park sat up in bed and looked around dumbly.
Park!
There was a knock at the window, and he scrambled over to it, pulling back the curtain. It was Steve. Right behind the glass, grinning like a maniac. He must be hanging from the window ledge. Steve's face disappeared, and Park heard him fall heavily onto the ground. That asshole. Park's mom was going to hear him. Park opened the window quickly and leaned out. He was going to tell Steve to go away, but then he saw Eleanor standing in the shadow of Steve's house with Tina. Were they holding her hostage? Was she holding a beer?
Eleanor. As soon as Park saw her, he climbed out the window and hung 4 feet from the ground. He was going to break his ankles. Eleanor felt a sob catch in her throat. He landed in a crouch like Spider-Man and ran toward her. She dropped the beer on the grass. Jesus, Tina said. You're welcome. That was the last beer.
Hey, Park, did I scare you? Steve asked. Did you think I was Freddy Krueger? You think you was gonna get away from me?
Park got to Eleanor and took her arms. What's wrong? He asked. What's going on? She started to cry, like majorly cry. She felt like herself again as soon as he touched her, and it was horrible. Are you bleeding? Park asked, taking her hand. Car, Tina whispered, like it was a warning. Eleanor pulled Park against the garage until the headlights had passed.
What's going on?
He asked again. We should get back to the garage, Tina said.
Park. He hadn't been in Steve's garage since grade school. They used to play foosball in here. Now there was the Camaro up on blocks and an old couch pushed against the wall. Steve sat at one end of the couch and immediately lit a joint. He held it out to Park, but Park shook his head. The garage already smelled like 1,000 joints had been smoked in here, then put out in 1,000 beers. The Camaro was rocking a little bit, and Steve kicked the door.
Settle down, Mikey. You're gonna knock it over.
Park couldn't even imagine a turn of events that would have led Eleanor here, but she'd practically dragged him into the garage, and now she was huddled against him. Park still thought maybe they'd kidnapped her. Was he supposed to pay ransom? Talk to me, he said to the top of Eleanor's head. What's going on?
Her stepdad is looking for her, Tina said.
Tina was sitting on the arm of the couch with her legs in Steve's lap. She took the joint from him.
Is that true?
Park asked Eleanor. She nodded into his chest. She wouldn't let him pull far enough away that he could look at her.
Fucking stepdads, Steve said. Motherfuckers, all of them.
He burst into laughter.
Oh, fuck, Mikey, did you hear that?
He kicked the Camaro again.
Mikey!
I have to leave, Eleanor whispered. Thank God. Park backed away from her and took her hand. Hey, Steve, we're going back to my house.
Be careful, man. He's been driving around in that shit-colored micro machine.
Park bent to clear the garage door. Eleanor stopped behind him.
Thank you, she said.
He would swear that she was talking to Tina. This night couldn't get any weirder. He led Eleanor through his backyard, then around the back of his grandparents' house to the driveway, past the spot by the garage where they liked to kiss goodbye. When they got to the RV, Park reached up and opened the screen door.
Go on, he said. It's always unlocked.
He and Josh used to play in here. It was like a little house with a bed at one end and a kitchen at the other. There was even a miniature stove and refrigerator. It had been a while since Park had been inside the RV. He couldn't stand up now without hitting his head on the ceiling. There was a checkerboard-sized table against the wall with two seats. Park sat on one side and sat Eleanor down across from him. He reached for her hands. Her right palm was streaked with blood, but she didn't seem to be in pain.
Eleanor, he said. What's going on?
He was pleading.
I have to leave, she said.
She was looking across the table like she'd just seen a ghost. Like she was one.
Why? He said. Is this about tonight?
In Park's head, it felt like everything must be about tonight. Like nothing that good and this bad could happen on the same night unless they were related. Whatever this was.
No, Eleanor said, rubbing her eyes. No, it's not about us. I mean...
She looked out the little window.
Why is your stepdad looking for you? Because he knows. Because I ran away. Why? Because he knows.
Her voice caught.
Because it's him.
What?
Oh, God, I shouldn't have come here, she said. I'm just making it worse. I'm sorry.
Park wanted to shake her, to shake through to her. She wasn't making any sense. 2 hours ago, everything had been perfect between them, and now... Park had to get back to his house. His mom was still awake, and his dad was going to be home any minute. He leaned over the table and took Eleanor by the shoulders.
Could we just start over? He whispered. Please. I don't know what you're talking about.
Eleanor closed her eyes and nodded wearily. She started over. She told him everything. And Park's hand started shaking before she was halfway through.
Maybe he won't hurt you,
he said, hoping it was true.
Maybe he's just trying to scare you. Here.
He pulled his hand inside his sleeve and tried to wipe Eleanor's face.
No, she said. You don't know. You don't see how he looks at me.
Chapter 49. Eleanor. How he looks at me. Like he's biding his time. Not like he wants me. Like he'll get around to me. When there's nothing and no one else left to destroy. How he waits up for me. Keeps track of me. How he's always there. When I'm eating. When I'm reading. When I'm brushing my hair. You don't see. Because I pretend not to.
Chapter 50. Park. Eleanor pushed her curls out of her face one by one, like she was gathering her wits by hand.
I have to go, she said.
She was making more sense now, and more eye contact, but Park still felt like someone had turned the world upside down and was shaking it.
You could talk to your mom tomorrow, he said. Everything might look different in the morning. You saw what he wrote on my books, she said evenly. Would you want me to stay there? I just don't want you to leave, he said. Where would you go? To your dad's house? No, he doesn't want me. But if you explained, he doesn't want me. Then where? I don't know.
She took a deep breath and squared her shoulders.
My uncle said I could spend the summer with him. Maybe he'll let me come up to St. Paul early.
St. Paul, Minnesota? She nodded.
But...
Park looked in Eleanor's eyes, and her hands fell to the table.
I know, she sobbed, slumping forward. I know.
There was no room to sit at the table next to her, so he dropped to his knees and pulled her onto the dusty linoleum floor.
Eleanor, when are you leaving? He asked. He pushed her hair out of her face and held it behind her head. Tonight, she said, I can't go home.
How are you going to get there? Have you called your uncle?
No, I don't know. I thought I'd take the bus. She was going to hitchhike. She figured she could walk as far as the interstate. Then she'd stick out her thumb for station wagons and minivans, family cars. If she hadn't been raped or murdered or sold into white slavery by Des Moines, she'd call her Uncle Collect. He'd come to get her, even if it was just to bring her home.
You can't take the bus by yourself, Park said.
I don't have a better plan.
I'll drive you, he said.
To the bus station?
To Minnesota.
Park, no, your parents will never let you.
So I won't ask.
But your dad will kill you.
No, he said. He'll ground me.
For life!
Do you think I even care about that right now?
He held her face in his hands.
Do you think I care about anything but you?
Chapter 51. Eleanor. Park said he'd come back after his dad got home and his parents were both asleep.
It might be a while. Don't turn on the light or anything, okay?
Duh.
And watch for the Impala.
Okay. He looked more serious than she'd seen him since the day he kicked Steve's ass, or since her first day on the bus when he'd ordered her to sit down. That was still the only time she'd heard him use the F word. He leaned into the RV and touched her chin. Please be careful, she said. And then he was gone. Eleanor sat back down at the table. She could see Park's driveway from there, through the lace curtains. She felt tired suddenly. She just wanted to lay her head down. It was already after midnight. It could be hours before Park came back. Maybe she should feel bad about involving him in all this. But she didn't. He was right. The worst thing that would happen to him, barring some terrible accident, was that he'd be grounded. And being grounded at his house was like winning the Price is Right showcase compared to what would happen if Eleanor got caught. Should she have left a note? Would her mom call the police? Was her mom okay? Were they all okay? Eleanor should have checked to see if the little kids were breathing. Her uncle probably wouldn't even let Eleanor stay once he found out she'd run away. God, whenever she started to think this plan through, it all fell apart. But it was already too late to turn back. It felt like the most important thing now was to run. The most important place to be was away. She'd get away, and then she'd figure out what to do next. Or maybe she wouldn't. Maybe she'd get away, and then she'd just stop. Eleanor had never thought about killing herself, ever. But she thought a lot about stopping. Just running until she couldn't run anymore, jumping from something so high that she'd never hit the bottom. Was Richie out looking for her now? Maisie and Ben would tell him about Park if they hadn't already, not because they liked Richie, though sometimes it still seemed like they did, because he had them on leashes. Like the first day Eleanor came to the house when Maisie was sitting on Richie's lap. Fuck. Just fuck. She should go back for Maisie. She should go back for all of them. She should find a way to fit them in her pockets. But she should definitely go back for Maisie. Maisie would run away with Eleanor. She wouldn't think twice. And then Uncle Jeff would send them both right home. Her mom would definitely call the police if she woke up and Maisie was gone. Bringing Maisie would ruin everything, even worse than it was already ruined. If Eleanor were the hero of some book, like The Boxcar Children or something, she'd try. If she were Dicey Tillerman, she'd find a way. She'd be brave and noble, and she'd find a way. But she wasn't. Eleanor wasn't any of those things. She was just trying to get through the night.
Park. Park walked quietly into his house through the back door. Nobody in his family ever locked anything. The TV was still on in his parents' bedroom.
He went straight to the bathroom and into the shower. He was pretty sure he smelled like every single thing that could get him in trouble.
Park?
His mom called when he walked out of the bathroom. Here, he said. Just going to bed. He buried his dirty clothes at the bottom of the hamper and dug all his leftover birthday and Christmas money out of his sock drawer. $60. That should be enough for gas. Probably. He didn't really know. If they could just get to St. Paul, Eleanor's uncle would help them figure it out. She wasn't sure her uncle would let her stay, but she said he was a decent guy.
And his wife was in the Peace Corps.
Park had already written his parents a note. Mom and Dad, I had to help Eleanor. I'll call you tomorrow, and I'll be back in a day or two. I know I'm in huge trouble, but this was an emergency, and I had to help. Park. His mom always kept her keys in the same place, on the little key-shaped plaque in the entryway that said, Keys. Park was going to take her keys, then sneak back out the kitchen door, the door farthest from his parents' room. His dad got home around 1:30. Park listened to him move around the kitchen, then the bathroom. He heard the door to his parents' room open. He heard the TV. Park lay on his bed and closed his eyes. There was no chance he'd fall asleep. The picture of Eleanor was still glowing on the inside of his eyelids. So beautiful. So peaceful. No, that wasn't quite right. Not peaceful, more like at peace. Like she was more comfortable out of her shirt than in it. Like she was happy inside out. When he opened his eyes, he saw her the way he'd left her in the RV. Tense and resigned. So far gone that light wouldn't even catch in her eyes. So far gone, she wasn't even thinking about him anymore. Park waited until it was quiet. Then he waited another 20 minutes. Then he grabbed his backpack and went through the motions he'd planned in his head. He stopped at the kitchen door. His dad had left his new hunting rifle out on the table. He was probably going to clean it tomorrow morning. For a minute, Park thought about taking the gun, but he couldn't think of when he'd use it. It's not like they were going to run into Richie on the way out of town. Hopefully. Park opened the door and was about to step out when his dad's voice stopped him. Park? He could have run for it, but his dad probably would have caught him. His dad was always bragging about being in the best shape of his life. Where do you think you're going? His dad whispered. I have to help Eleanor. What does Eleanor need help with at 2 a.m?
She's running away.
And you're going with her?
No. I was just going to give her a ride to her uncle's house.
Where does her uncle live?
Minnesota.
Jesus F. Christ, Park, his dad said in his normal voice. Are you serious?
Dad,
Park stepped toward him, pleading.
She has to go. It's her stepdad.
Did he touch her? Because if he touched her, we're calling the police.
He writes her these notes.
What kind of notes? Park rubbed his forehead. He didn't like to think about the notes.
Sick ones.
Did she talk to her mom?
Her mom's not in very good shape. I think he hurts her.
That little fucker. His dad looked down at the gun, then looked back at Park, rubbing his chin. So you're going to drive Eleanor to her uncle's house. Will he take her in?
She thinks so.
I gotta tell you, Park, this doesn't sound like much of a plan.
I know.
His dad sighed and scratched the back of his neck. But I can't think of a better one. Park's head jerked up. Call me when you get there. His dad said quietly. It's a straight shot up from Des Moines. Do you have a map?
I thought I'd get one at a gas station.
If you get tired, pull into a rest stop. And don't talk to anybody unless you have to. Do you have any money?
$60.
Here. His dad walked over to the cookie jar and pulled out a bunch of 20s. If this doesn't work with her uncle, don't take Eleanor home. Bring her back here, and we'll figure out what to do next.
Okay. Thanks, Dad.
Don't thank me yet. I've got one condition. No more eyeliner, Park thought. You're taking the truck, his dad said. His dad stood on the front steps with his arms folded. Of course he had to watch, like he was umpiring a goddamn Taekwondo bout. Park closed his eyes. Eleanor was still there. Eleanor. He started the engine and shifted smoothly into reverse, rolled out of the driveway, shifted into first, then pulled forward without a sputter. Because he knew how to drive a stick. Jesus. Chapter 52. Park. Okay? She nodded and climbed in. Stay down, he said. The first couple hours were a blur. Park wasn't used to driving the truck, and it died a few times at red lights. Then he got on the interstate heading west instead of east, and it took 20 minutes to turn around again. Eleanor didn't say anything, just stared ahead and held onto her seatbelt with both hands. He put his hand on her leg, and it was like she didn't notice it was there. They got off the interstate again somewhere in Iowa to get gas and a map. Park went in. He bought Eleanor a Coke and a sandwich, and when he got back to the truck, she was slumped against the passenger door, asleep. Good, he tried to tell himself. She's exhausted. He climbed up behind the wheel and took a few rough breaths. Then he slammed the sandwich onto the dash. How can she be asleep? If everything went right tonight, Park would be driving home tomorrow morning by himself. He'd probably be allowed to drive now whenever he wanted. But there was nowhere he wanted to go without Eleanor. How could she sleep through their last hours together? How could she sleep sitting up like that? Her hair was down and wild, wine red even in this light, and her mouth was slightly open. Strawberry girl. He tried again to remember what he'd thought the first time he saw her. He tried to remember how this had happened, how she went from someone he'd never met to the only one who mattered. And he wondered, what would happen if he didn't take her to her uncle's house? What would happen if he kept driving? Why couldn't this have waited? If Eleanor's life had caved in next year or the year after, she could have run to him. Not from. Not away. Jesus, why couldn't she just wake up? Park stayed awake for another hour or so, fueled by coke and hurt feelings. Then the wreck of the night caught up with him. There wasn't a rest stop around, so he pulled off on a country road onto the gravel that passed as a shoulder. He unbuckled his seatbelt, unbuckled Eleanor's, then pulled her into him, laying his head on hers. She still smelled like last night, like sweat and sweetness and the Impala. He cried into her hair until he fell asleep.
Eleanor. She woke up in Park's arms. It caught her by surprise. She would have thought it was a dream, but her dreams were always terrifying, with Nazis and babies crying and teeth rotting out of her mouth. Eleanor had never dreamed anything as nice as this, as nice as Park, sleepy, soft, and warm. Warm through. Someday, she thought, somebody's going to wake up to this every morning. Park's face, asleep, was a brand new kind of beautiful. Sunshine trapped in amber skin, full, flat mouth. Strong, arched cheekbones. Eleanor didn't even have cheekbones. He caught her by surprise, and before she could help herself, her heart was breaking for him, like it didn't have anything better to break over. Maybe it didn't. The sun was just below the horizon, and the inside of the truck was bluey pink. Eleanor kissed Park's new face, just under his eye, not quite on his nose. He stirred, and she felt every part of him shift against her. She ran the end of her nose along his brow and kissed his lashes. His eyelids fluttered. Only eyelids do that, and butterflies. And his arms came to life around her. Eleanor. He sighed. She held his beautiful face and kissed him, like it was the end of the world.
Park.
She wouldn't be on the bus with him. She wouldn't roll her eyes at him in English. She wouldn't pick a fight with him just because she was bored. She wouldn't cry in his bedroom about the things he couldn't fix for her. The whole sky was the color of her skin.
Eleanor. There's only one of him, she thought. And he's right here. He knows I like a song before I've heard it. He laughs before I even get to the punchline. There's a place on his chest, just below his throat, that makes me want to let him open doors for me. There's only one of him.
Park.
His parents never talked about how they met, but when Park was younger, he used to try to imagine it. He loved how much they loved each other. It was the thing he thought about when he woke up scared in the middle of the night. Not that they loved him, they were his parents, they had to love him. That they loved each other. They didn't have to do that. None of his friends' parents were still together, and in every case, that seemed like the number one thing that had gone wrong with his friends' lives. But Park's parents loved each other. They kissed each other on the mouth, no matter who was watching. What were the chances you'd ever meet someone like that, he wondered. Someone you could love forever. Someone who would forever love you back. And what did you do when that person was born half a world away? The math seemed impossible. How did his parents get so lucky? They couldn't have felt lucky at the time. His dad's brother had just died in Vietnam. That's why they sent his dad to Korea. And when his parents got married, his mom had to leave everything and everyone she loved behind. Park wondered if his dad saw his mom in the street, or from the road, or working in a restaurant. He wondered how they both knew. This kiss had to last Park forever. It had to get him home. He needed to remember it when he woke up scared in the middle of the night.
Eleanor. The first time he'd held her hand, it felt so good that it crowded out all the bad things. It felt better than anything had ever hurt.
Park.
Eleanor's hair caught fire at dawn. Her eyes were dark and shining, and his arms were sure of her. The first time he touched her hand, he'd known.
Eleanor. There's no shame with Park. Nothing is dirty. Because Park is the sun. And that's the best way she could think to explain it.
Park.
Eleanor, no, we have to stop. No. We can't do this. No, don't stop, Park. I don't even know how to. I don't have anything. It doesn't matter. But I don't want you to get... I don't care. I care. Eleanor, it's our last chance. No. No, I can't. No. I need to believe that it isn't our last chance. Eleanor, can you hear me? I need you to believe it too.
Chapter 53. Park. Eleanor got out of the truck, and Park wandered into the cornfield to pee, which was embarrassing, but less embarrassing than pissing his pants. When he came back, she was sitting on the hood of the truck. She looked beautiful, fierce, leaning forward like a figurehead. He climbed up and sat next to her.
Hey, he said. Hey.
He pushed his shoulder up against hers and nearly wept with relief when she laid her head against him. Weeping again today seemed wholly inevitable.
Do you really believe that?
She asked.
What? That we'll have other chances? That we have any chance at all?
Yes.
No matter what happens, she said forcefully, I'm not coming home.
I know. She was quiet. No matter what happens, Park said, I love you. She put her arms around his waist and he hugged her shoulders. I just can't believe that life would give us to each other, he said, and then take it back.
I can, she said. Life's a bastard.
He held her tighter and pushed his face into her neck.
But it's up to us, he said softly. It's up to us not to lose this.
Eleanor. She sat right next to him for the rest of the trip, even though there wasn't a seatbelt and she had to sit with the stick shift between her legs. She figured it was still a lot safer than riding in the back of Richie's Isuzu. They stopped at another truck stop and Park bought her cherry Coke and beef jerky. He called his parents, Colette. She still couldn't believe they were okay with this. My dad's okay, he said. I think my mom's freaking out. Have they heard from my mom? Or anybody? No, or at least they didn't mention it. Park asked her if she wanted to call her uncle. She didn't. I smell like Steve's garage, she said. My uncle's going to think I'm a drug dealer. Park laughed. I think you spilled beer on your shirt. Maybe he'll just think you're an alcoholic. She looked down at her shirt. There was a smear of blood from when she'd cut her hand on her bed and something crusty on the shoulder, probably snot from all that crying. Here, Park said. He was taking off his sweatshirt, then his T-shirt. He handed the shirt to her. It was green and said Prefab Sprout. I can't take this, she said, watching him pull his sweatshirt back on over his bare chest. It's new. Plus, it probably wouldn't fit. You can give it back later. Close your eyes, she said. Of course, Park said softly. He looked away. There was no one else in the parking lot. Eleanor slouched down and put Park's T-shirt on underneath her own, then pulled the dirty shirt off. That's how she changed in gym class. His shirt was about as tight as her gym suit, but it smelled clean, like Park. Okay, she said. He looked back at her and his smile changed. Keep it, he said. When they got to Minneapolis, Park stopped at another gas station to ask for directions. Is it easy? She asked him when he got back in the truck. Like Sunday morning, he said. We're really close.
Chapter 54. Park. He was more nervous about his driving once they got into the city. Driving in St. Paul was nothing like driving in Omaha. Eleanor was reading the map for him, but she'd never read a map outside of class before, and between the two of them, they kept making wrong turns.
I'm sorry, Eleanor kept saying.
It's okay, Park said, glad she was sitting right next to him. I'm not in any hurry. She pressed her hand into the top of his leg.
I've been thinking, she said.
Yeah?
I don't want you to come inside when we get there.
You mean you want to talk to them by yourself?
No, well, yeah. But I mean, I don't want you to wait for me.
He tried to look down at her, but he was afraid he'd miss his turn again.
What? No, what if they don't want you to stay? Then they can figure out how to get me home. I'll be their problem. Maybe that'll give me more time to talk to them about everything.
But I'm not ready for you to stop being my problem.
It makes more sense, Park. If you leave soon, you can still get home by dark.
But if I leave soon, his voice dropped. I leave soon.
We have to say goodbye anyway, she said. Does it matter if it's now or a few hours from now or tomorrow morning?
Are you kidding? He looked down at her, hoping he'd miss his turn. Yes.
Eleanor. It just makes more sense, she said. And then she bit her lip. The only way she was going to get through any of this was by force of will. The houses were starting to look familiar. Big gray and white clapboard houses set far back on their lawns. Eleanor's whole family had come up here for Easter the year after her dad left. Her uncle and his wife were atheists, but it was still a really fun trip. They didn't have kids of their own, probably by choice, Eleanor thought. Probably because they knew cute kids grow up into ugly, problematic teenagers. But Uncle Jeff had invited her here. He wanted her to come, at least for a few months. Maybe she didn't have to tell him everything right away. Maybe he'd just think she was early.
Is that it? Park asked.
He stopped in front of a gray-blue house with a willow tree in the front yard. Yeah, she said. She recognized the house. She recognized her uncle's Volvo in the driveway. Park stepped on the gas. Where are you going?
Just
around the block, he said.
Park. He drove around the block, for all the good it did him. Then he parked a few houses down from her uncle's so they could see the house from the car. Eleanor couldn't look away from it.
Eleanor. She had to say goodbye to him. Now. And she didn't know how.
Park. You remember my phone number, right?
867-5309?
Seriously, Eleanor.
Seriously, Park. I'm never going to forget your phone number.
Call me as soon as you can, okay? Tonight. Collect. And give me your uncle's number. Or, if he doesn't want you to call, send the number to me in a letter. In one of the many, many letters you're going to write me.
He might send me home.
No. Park let go of the gear shift and took her hand. You're not going back there. If your uncle sends you home, come to my house. My parents will help us figure it out. My dad already said that they would. Eleanor's head fell forward. He's not going to send you home, Park said. He's going to help. She nodded deliberately at the floor. And he's going to let you accept frequent, private, long-distance phone calls. She was still. Hey, Park said, trying to lift up her chin. Eleanor.
Eleanor. Stupid Asian kid. Stupid, beautiful Asian kid. Thank God she couldn't make her mouth work right now, because if she could, there'd be no end to the melodramatic garbage she'd say to him. She was pretty sure she'd thank him for saving her life. Not just yesterday, but like practically every day since they'd met, which made her feel like the dumbest, weakest girl. If you couldn't save your own life, was it even worth saving? There's no such thing as handsome princes, she told herself. There's no such thing as happily ever after. She looked up at Park, into his golden green eyes. You saved my life, she tried to tell him. Not forever, not for good, probably just temporarily, but you saved my life, and now I'm yours. The me that's me right now is yours. Always.
Park.
I don't know how to say goodbye to you, she said.
He smoothed her hair off her face. He'd never seen her so fair. Then don't.
But I have to go.
So go, he said with his hands on her cheeks. But don't say goodbye. It's not goodbye. She rolled her eyes and shook her head.
That's so lame.
Seriously, you can't cut me 5 minutes of slack?
That's what people say, it's not goodbye, when they're too afraid to face what they're really feeling. I'm not going to see you tomorrow, Park. I don't know when I'll see you again. That deserves more than it's not goodbye.
I'm not afraid to face what I'm feeling, he said.
Not you,
she said, her voice breaking.
Me?
You, he said, putting his arms around her and promising himself that it wouldn't be the last time, are the bravest person I know. She shook her head again like she was trying to shake off the tears.
Just kiss me goodbye,
she whispered. Only for today, he thought. Not ever.
Eleanor. You think that holding someone hard will bring them closer. You think that you can hold them so hard that you'll still feel them embossed on you when you pull away. Every time Eleanor pulled away from Park, she felt the gasping loss of him. When she finally got out of the truck, it was because she didn't think she could stand touching and untouching him again. The next time she ripped herself away, she'd lose some skin. Park started to get out with her, but she stopped him. No, she said. Stay. She looked up anxiously at her uncle's house.
It's going to be okay, Park said.
She nodded. Right.
Because I love you.
She laughed. Is that why?
It is, actually.
Goodbye, she said. Goodbye, Park.
Goodbye, Eleanor. You know, until tonight, when you're going to call me.
What if they're not home? God, that would be anticlimactic.
That would be great.
Dork, she whispered with a leftover smile on her face. She stepped back and closed the door. I love you, he mouthed. Maybe he was saying it out loud. She couldn't hear him anymore.
Chapter 55. Park. He didn't ride the bus anymore. He didn't have to. His mom gave him the Impala when his dad bought her a new Taurus. He didn't ride the bus anymore because he'd have the whole seat to himself. Not that the Impala wasn't just as ruined with memories. Some mornings, if Park got to school early, he sat in the parking lot with his head on the steering wheel and let whatever was left of Eleanor wash over him until he ran out of air. Not that school was any better. She wasn't at her locker or in class. Mr. Stessman said it was pointless to read Macbeth out loud without Eleanor.
Fie, my lord, fie, he lamented.
She didn't stay for dinner. She didn't lean against him when he watched TV. Park spent most nights lying on his bed because it was the only place she'd never been. He lay on his bed and never turned on the stereo.
Eleanor. She didn't ride the bus anymore. She rode to school with her uncle. He made her go, even though there were only 4 weeks left and everybody was already studying for finals. There weren't any Asian kids at her new school. There weren't even any black kids. When her uncle went down to Omaha, he said she didn't have to go. He was gone 3 days, and when he came back, he brought the black trash bag from her bedroom closet. Eleanor already had new clothes, and a new bookcase, and a boom box, and a six-pack of blank cassette tapes.
Park. Eleanor didn't call that first night. She hadn't said that she would, now that he thought about it, She hadn't said that she'd write either, but Park thought that went unsaid. He thought that was a given. After Eleanor got out of the truck, Park had waited in front of her uncle's house. He was supposed to drive away as soon as the door opened, as soon as it was clear that somebody was home. But he couldn't just leave her like that. He watched the woman who came to the door give Eleanor a big hug, and then he watched the door close behind them. And then he waited, just in case Eleanor changed her mind. Just in case she decided after all that he should come in. The door stayed closed. Park remembered his promise and drove away. The sooner I get home, he thought, the sooner I'll hear from her again. He sent Eleanor a postcard from the first truck stop. Welcome to Minnesota, land of 10,000 lakes. When he got home, his mom ran to the door to hug him.
All right? His dad asked.
Yeah, Park said.
How was the truck?
Fine.
His dad went outside to make sure.
You,
his mom said.
I was so worried about you.
I'm fine, Mom. Just tired.
How's Eleanor?
She asked.
She okay?
I think so.
Has she called? No, nobody called.
As soon as his mom let go of him, Park went to his room and wrote Eleanor a letter.
Eleanor. When Aunt Susan opened the door, Eleanor was already crying. Eleanor, Aunt Susan kept saying. Oh my goodness, Eleanor. What are you doing here? Eleanor tried to tell her that everything was okay, which wasn't true. She wouldn't be there if everything were okay, but nobody was dead. Nobody's dead, she said. Oh my God, Jeffrey, Aunt Susan called. Wait here, sweetheart. Jeff? Left alone, Eleanor realized that she shouldn't have told Park to leave right away. She wasn't ready for him to leave. She opened the front door and ran out to the street. Park was already gone. She looked both ways for him. When she turned around, her aunt and uncle were standing on the front porch watching her. Phone calls, peppermint tea, her aunt and uncle talking in the kitchen long after she went to bed. Sabrina, five of them. We've got to get them out of there, Jeffrey. What if she isn't telling the truth? Eleanor took Park's photo out of her back pocket and smoothed it out on the bedspread. It didn't look like him. October was already a lifetime away, and this afternoon was another lifetime. The world was spinning so fast, she didn't know where she stood anymore. Her aunt had lent her some pajamas. They wore about the same size. But Eleanor put Park's shirt back on as soon as she got out of the shower. It smelled like him. Like his house. Like potpourri. Like soap. Like boy. Like happiness. She fell forward onto the bed, holding the hole in her stomach. No one would ever believe her. She wrote her mom a letter. She said everything she'd wanted to say in the last 6 months. She said she was sorry. She begged her to think of Ben and Mouse and Maisie. She threatened to call the police. Her Aunt Susan gave her a stamp. They're in the junk drawer, Eleanor. Take as many as you need.
Park. When he got sick of his bedroom, when there was nothing left in his life that smelled like vanilla, Park walked by Eleanor's house. Sometimes the truck was there, sometimes it wasn't. Sometimes the Rottweiler was asleep on the porch. But the broken toys were gone, and there were never any strawberry blonde kids playing in the yard. Josh said that Eleanor's little brother had stopped coming to school.
Everybody says they're gone, the whole family.
That's great news,
their mother said.
Maybe that pretty mom wake up to bad situation, you know? Good for Eleanor.
Park just nodded. He wondered if his letters even got to wherever she was now.
Eleanor. There was a red rotary phone in the spare bedroom, her bedroom. Whenever it rang, Eleanor felt like picking it up and saying, "What is it, Commissioner Gordon?" Sometimes, when she was alone in the house, she took the phone over to her bed and listened to the dial tone. She practiced Park's number, her fingers sliding across the dial. Sometimes, after the dial tone stopped, she pretended he was whispering in her ear. "Have you ever had a boyfriend?" Danny asked. Danny was in theater camp, too. They ate lunch together, sitting on the stage with their legs dangling in the orchestra pit. "No," Eleanor said. "Park wasn't a boyfriend. He was a champion." "Have you ever kissed anybody?" Eleanor shook her head. He wasn't her boyfriend. And they weren't going to break up or get bored or drift apart. They weren't going to become another stupid high school romance. They were just going to stop. Eleanor had decided back in his dad's truck. She'd decided in Albert Lea, Minnesota. If they weren't going to get married, if it wasn't forever, it was only a matter of time. They were just going to stop. Park was never going to love her more than he did on the day they said goodbye. And she couldn't bear to think of him loving her less.
Park. When he got sick of himself, Park went to her old house. Sometimes the truck was there. Sometimes it wasn't. Sometimes, Park stood at the end of the sidewalk and hated everything the house stood for.
Chapter 56. Eleanor. Letters, postcards, packages that rattled like loaded cassette tapes. None of them opened. None of them read. "Dear Park," Eleanor wrote on a clean sheet of stationery. "Dear Park," she tried to explain. But the explanations fell apart in her hands. Everything true was too hard to write. He was too much to lose. Everything she felt for him was too hot to touch. "I'm sorry," she wrote, then crossed it out. "It's just..." She tried again. She threw the half-written letters away. She threw the unopened envelopes in the bottom drawer. "Dear Park," she whispered, her forehead hanging over the dresser. "Just stop."
Park. His dad said Park needed a summer job to pay for gas. Neither of them mentioned that Park never went anywhere, or that he'd started putting eyeliner on with his thumb, blacking out his own eyes. He looked just wrecked enough to get a job at Drastic Plastic. The girl who hired him had two rows of holes in each ear. His mom stopped bringing in the mail. He knew it was because she hated telling him that nothing had come for him. Park brought in the mail himself now every night when he got home from work. Every night, praying for rain. He had an endless supply and an insatiable appetite for punk music. "I can't hear myself thinking here," his dad said, coming into Park's room for the third night in a row to turn down the stereo. "Duh," Eleanor would have said. Eleanor didn't start school in the fall. Not with Park, anyway. She didn't celebrate the fact that juniors don't have to take gym. She didn't say, "Unholy union, Batman," when Steve and Tina eloped over Labor Day. Park had written her a letter all about it. He told her everything that happened, and everything that didn't, every day since she'd left. He kept writing her letters months after he stopped sending them. On New Year's Day, he wrote that he hoped she'd get everything she ever wished for. Then he tossed the letter into a box under his bed. Chapter 57. Park. He'd stopped trying to bring her back. She only came back when she felt like it anyway, in dreams and lies and broken-down déjà vu. Like, Park would be driving to work, and he'd see a girl with red hair standing on the street, and he'd swear for half an airless moment that it was her.
Or he'd wake up when it was still dark, sure that she was waiting for him outside, sure that she needed him. But he couldn't summon her. Sometimes he couldn't even remember what she looked like, even when he was looking at her picture. Maybe he'd looked at it too much. He'd stopped trying to bring her back. So why did he keep coming here, to this crappy little house? Eleanor wasn't here. She was never really here. And she'd been gone too long. Almost a year now. Park turned to walk away from the house, but the little brown truck whipped too fast into the driveway, jumping the curb and nearly clipping him. Park stopped on the sidewalk and waited. The driver's side door swung open. Maybe, he thought. Maybe this is why I'm here. Eleanor's stepdad, Richie, leaned slowly out of the cab. Park recognized him from the one time he'd seen him before, when Park had brought Eleanor the second issue of Watchmen and her stepdad had answered the door. The final issue of Watchmen came out a few months after Eleanor left. He wondered if she'd read it, and whether she thought Ozymandias was a villain, and what she thought Dr. Manhattan meant when he said, "Nothing ever ends at the end." Park still wondered what Eleanor thought about everything. Her stepdad didn't see Park at first. Richie was moving slowly, uncertainly. When he did notice Park, he looked at him like he wasn't sure he was really there.
"Who are you?" Richie shouted.
Park didn't answer. Richie turned jaggedly, jerking toward him.
"What do you want?"
Even from a few feet away, he smelled sour, like beer, like basements. Park stood his ground. "I want to kill you," he thought. "And I can," he realized. "I should." Richie wasn't much bigger than Park, and he was drunk and disoriented. Plus, he could never want to hurt Park as much as Park wanted to hurt him. Unless Richie was armed, unless he got lucky, Park could do this. Richie shuffled closer.
"What do you want?"
he shouted again. The force of his own voice knocked him off balance and he tipped forward, falling thickly to the ground. Park had to step back not to catch him.
"Fuck,"
Richie said, raising himself up on his knees and holding himself not quite steady. "I want to kill you," Park thought. "And I can. Someone should." Park looked down at his steel-toed docks. He'd just bought them at work, on sale with his employee discount. He looked at Richie's head, hanging from his neck like a leather bag. Park hated him more than he thought it was possible to hate someone, more than he'd ever thought it was possible to feel anything. Almost. He lifted his boot and kicked the ground in front of Richie's face. Ice and mud and driveway slopped into the older man's open mouth. Richie coughed violently and banked into the ground. Park waited for him to get up. But Richie just lay there, spitting curses and rubbing salt and gravel into his eyes. He wasn't dead. But he wasn't getting up. Park waited. And then he walked home.
Eleanor. Letters, postcards, yellow padded packages that rattled in her hands. None of them opened, none of them read. It was bad when the letters came every day. It was worse when they stopped. Sometimes she laid them out on the carpet like tarot cards, like Wonka bars, and wondered whether it was too late.
Chapter 58. Park. Eleanor didn't go to prom with him. Kat did. Kat from work. She was thin and dark, and her eyes were as blue and flat as breath mints. When Park held Kat's hand, it was like holding hands with a mannequin, and it was such a relief that he kissed her. He fell asleep on prom night in his tuxedo pants and a Fugazi t-shirt. He woke up the next morning when something light fell on his shirt. He opened his eyes. His dad was standing over him. "Mail call," his dad said, almost gently. Park put his hand to his heart. Eleanor hadn't written him a letter. It was a postcard. "Greetings from the land of 10,000 lakes," it said on the front. Park turned it over and recognized her scratchy handwriting. It filled his head with song lyrics. He sat up. He smiled. Something heavy and winged took off from his chest. Eleanor hadn't written him a letter. It was a postcard. Just 3 words long.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Eleanor and Park by Rainbow Rowell. This program was directed by Jessica Kay, executive producer Orly Moskowitz. Text copyright 2013 by Rainbow Rowell. Production copyright 2013, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.